What's going on with dance and stuff? What's happening with dance and things? What's going on? What's happening? What's going on with dance and stuff?
Making a list of all the friends I know in other countries so I can move there. It's 2024.
Oh, dear.
Can you talk me down off this ledge?
I mean, not in any meaningful way. I don't have any... You know, I don't know anything. I somehow hang on... My body hangs on to hope, you know? Sticks
right,
around,
right,
I think.
Right. Yes.
I think...
Yes.
The feeling in my body is, it's gonna be okay. Maybe he won't be the president. But I will tell you something that... gave me pause, I should say.
Uh-huh. What was that?
And it was to do with things that you've been talking about and things that we've said last week on the podcast about voting and politics and the youth, etc. I went to see Niall Harris's show, which Under the Radar Festival, which is like, they brought it back to Abrams Art Center. So I went to see that show on Sunday. And it was remarkable in many ways. Visually, I was gooped. I was
gagged.
I thought, give them all the awards for their beautiful show. And I read this article, an interview that Gia did with Niall in the Times just now.
Yeah, I saw that.
And it really contextualized some of what I saw over the weekend, because... At the end of the article, Niall says, you know, his big dream is to direct and design, like, a big pop concert, like a Doja Cat kind of thing.
Right.
Miley Cyrus. And I was like, yes, that
is... Remember Miley Cyrus's Bangers tour? Wow.
No.
Wow. Look it up, everyone. Everyone else, go home. Like,
but
think
I did,
about
I
it.
I did think, like, that is the correct... or place for Niall Harris, because the way that Niall dealt with scale in the Playhouse at Abrams Art Center, I've never seen someone handle scale in that way, in that space. And I was like, wow.
I mean, it's clear in the photos from that article even, that like, this is a visually engaged practice.
And also,
I mean, it looks like a
very
studio
kind of
artist.
Politically engaged, and this is a person who comes from a theater background, and they're employing various like improvisational dance idioms, whatever. But this performer Crackhead Barney, who's in the show, does this a thing where they went around the audience asking who are you fucking and who are you voting for, and with a microphone. And it was all funny, and it was, like, it was provocative, and people had funny answers, and it was the, you know, Crackhead Barney handled it, like, really excitingly, and, but what was concerning, and again gave me pause, was that a lot of the young people that Crackhead Barney asked the question of said, I'm not voting. I thought, get a grip. Everybody, get a grip, okay? That was what I was struck with in that moment. And I understand conceptually the idea of not voting, right? Like, I'm taking a stand and I'm not supporting these things. But by not supporting those things, you are setting yourself up to support something really, really bad. Something really, really bad. And it's like, we know in this country, this is not like other countries where there can be many candidates on the ticket. There just can't be. There won't be. There will be two. And it's kind of like, if you're not going to vote for one of those two, or it's just like you're not voting at all. I don't know. I found it very scary. I thought...
It is scary.
It's a real get a grip moment, and like by choosing to be ideologically
Well, it's a very put on your big boy pants, you know.
Absolutely. Like ideological integrity at this point is a no. It's a no. You have to do what's going to be best for everybody.
Yeah.
Okay. That's what I think about it. No.
Yeah.
I have power nearby. Don't worry. Don't worry, everyone.
Okay. I'm glad to hear you have electricity.
Let's just move this over here. Yeah, I mean, I think that, like, no voting thing is related to the general feeling that I have, which is about, like, powerlessness. Yes. And that, like, to not engage at all means you're not responsible for what happens.
Right.
Like, I'm not going to vote for Joe Biden because, like, look at the Palestinians. So if I didn't right. vote for that person, then I am not responsible for the complexities of what, like, an elected official has right. to deal with.
I'm like, you need to now be responsible for what's going on in this country right now. Do you care about your own rights as a queer person? Do you care about your own rights as a woman? Do you care about your own rights as a person of color? All of those are completely in jeopardy if you don't vote for Joe Biden.
Well, and again, I think what I said last week was about the importance of primaries and like political activism before an election, so that I think of like the Bernie Sanders moment and like people fighting for Bernie Sanders to be on the ticket. Mm-hmm. The problem was that, you know, that which was like a problematic thing about like the whole system set up sort of against Bernie Sanders. So, you know, the complaints around that whole dynamic, that's all valid. But end of mm-hmm. the day, when that election comes, you are basically deciding between two people.
Yes.
And if you don't care, if you think there's no difference between Joe Biden and Donald Trump,
you're ridiculous.
I don't know what to say.
I'm sorry. That is, if you identify with that sentiment, you are ridiculous.
Like, you fully, okay? I don't know, you fully have given up on, like, that, like, democracy. You believe. And do I think that it's difficult to believe that democracy is, like, a real thing and stuff? Yeah.
Of course.
But especially, yeah. like, I also think, like, living in New York City, my experience there was I never felt connected to, like, local, any kind of, like, person-to-person kind of political dynamic. That does feel different in, like, a small town where, like, people live with you, so it feels it does actually feel very local, and you're like, oh, there's that, like, you know, town council person or whatever. We don't have a mayor here, right. but like, if you know, right. I can imagine that all being like, oh, hey, you know, which, like, I do wish that there was more of that feeling, and I don't know how, you know, that's just the thing about scale, yeah. I guess, and like, how many people does a person represent? Local, whatever, but I think there's a lot of evidence that democracy actually exists currently. I think there's a lot of, like, hating on America all the time, and I certainly for, like, my whole life, like, the popular thing has been to hate on America, and I'm really, like, I think that is a narrative that needs to change, like, because there's an irresponsibility in that dynamic of just being like, this place is awful and it's someone else's mm-hmm. fault and, like, right. let's just blow it up.
Yeah.
And if you look at other countries, you start seeing what democracy actually is doing here, which is a lot of good. You know, there's, like, the news, like, Obamacare, all, you know. And it yeah. obviously swings in both directions. So you get, like, the abortion, you know. And that's people voting, and that's people putting people specific people in power.
That is the residual effects of Donald Trump having been in the White House, because the only institution that has kind of profound power in this country is the Supreme Court.
Well, that's not true. This is, I mean, every level of every person elected has some power, and every person not elected has some power. And it's this idea that, like, no one has any power actually, that is deteriorating the democracy. Donald Trump literally came in and was like, I'm the only person who can do anything. And people are like, yes, I don't have to do anything. You do it. Thank you. That's amazing. Because you know what I always wanted? A dictatorship. Can we call that democracy and say that that's America?
But what I'm referring to is that, like, it's important to have the right people basically picking the people who are going to affect the judicial system.
Right. Well, that's the whole system of the whole thing. So, like, right. You know, that's there was like a whole campaign to get the court to look like this, you know, which is,
yeah,
like,
and it worked.
Yeah, because people are like, well, I'll just stay home.
Right. So if you're not going to vote and Donald Trump becomes the president again,
see you in the camps,
because nobody matters. And like Donald Trump and Joe Biden are old and they're bad and they're clueless. And then Donald Trump gets more of these crazy fascists onto the Supreme Court. Good luck with your life. Okay. Your rights are gone.
Yeah. Anyways. I can't help but think, like, there's a denial about the very real repercussions. Like, I am, like,
we are already experiencing
nobody in Nazi Germany saw that coming.
No, and we're in a Joe Biden presidency, which is unfortunate. And these terrible things are happening because of Donald Trump. You know what I mean? Like, anyways, Well, Roe versus Wade happened during the Joe Biden presidency.
Sure. Right. I don't think people are blaming that on Joe Biden. But
no, of course
these,
not.
You know, like, these other things terrible have, things like, that are happening things, in terms of, like, surprise, surprise, the Middle East being a insane political situation with, like, atrocities.
Right, but, like,
as if that hasn't
these
been,
things
like,
that happen historically have these huge years. Repercussions. And so we have to have more time without Donald Trump. Okay? That's it.
Absolutely.
Okay. Anyways,
and
that's
the feeling
like of this podcast.
I mean, there's like Donald Trump should be in prison, clearly, for you know, pick a topic, like
so
guilty.
Many things.
And
that, wait,
like,
I'm also
he's still
like,
a possible president is insane.
So Nikki Haley and Ron DeSantis continue to have these debates, and it seems like the Republican people have decided that they are the alternates, right? One of them is going to be the alternate.
Yeah, I guess so.
They're the cover,
right?
For
right.
In case.
Uh huh. I so guess that's like, what that, that's like literally what's playing out. Yeah. I guess. I mean, I don't know if like technically that's how, like, if Donald Trump goes to prison, is he still on the ballot? If he gets elected, does he? What happens? He pardons himself from prison?
I suppose, yeah.
Like, I think there's something around, you know, because one of the defenses in terms of the ballot dynamic with the being removed from the ballot for, you know, being a traitor or whatever the word is.
Insurrectionist. You know,
one of the defenses is that he was never found guilty. But essentially what the January 6th prosecution is about is, I think, about finding him guilty for that. So I don't know, but I don't know how that plays out. That certainly doesn't seem like it's going to happen before primaries as they're beginning, like next week or whatever. But I think would seemingly have some repercussions for the general election ballot, that like you couldn't be on the ballot at all.
I don't understand how this has gone on so long and has taken so long, and I'm like, they're whatever. I don't understand.
Because it takes longer to like go through the judicial process than it does to storm the Capitol. That's like, you know,
truly,
that's like the state of things. So that's, I mean, democracy is not the most efficient method of ruling. That's why people would love to have a dictator.
This has been outrageous. I'm like, he should have been in court the week after he literally told people to go do the thing they did. But in like,
well, he was still in no uncertain terms. So,
yeah.
You know, I mean, the absurdity of yesterday with his hearing and like, basically like the idea that, the Justice Department doesn't have standing to take this case, even, you know, that like he should have been removed from office essentially. Even and then there's Mitch McConnell, you know, having said like, we're not gonna remove him from office. Like, that's not our job. That's like the Justice Department. So this like absurdity of like, again, no one taking responsibility to take an action. So
anyways, this is all very peculiar and absurd, and I understand at the same time why young people are like, nothing matters, this is all ridiculous, because, you know, the supposed leaders of this country do behave as if nothing matters and everything is ridiculous.
But the part of this is the fallacy of adulthood. As a nearly 40-year-old person, it's very clear to me that people don't become adults by getting older.
No, of course not.
So, you know, these kids, God bless them and their energy and their youthful skin and so forth. Yeah. But I believed as a young person that, like, the adults in the room should be, like, behaving better. And the fact that they weren't meant we should hate them. Mm. But obviously there's a resentment because the power dynamic. People grow up and they get, like, more power. They accumulate power, just like families accumulate power over time, if they're lucky, I guess. So that's why I'm like, young people of the world, you know, what's that Gandhi line? Be the change you wish to see. You, like, actually have to act like the adults. You actually have to do the voting. You have to do the, like, not cool things.
Yeah.
Because it's not cool to be an adult.
No.
That's why people who get older refuse to be adults, because it's not cool.
It's no fun.
So, I don't know.
I know.
But I am afraid.
I understand. Was that helpful to have that crazy talk we just had about it?
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't either. Well, you certainly upset me.
Okay? Well, and it's this thing of, like, will setting my hair on fire work? You know, like, there is a kind of, like, I watch, like, late night jokes and, you know, the news, and I'm like, but what? No one can do anything. I'm just like, is this what it felt like in Nazi Germany, like, in the lead up to?
Right. Was it business as usual?
Fucking camps. And yeah. I really am like, this, it probably was, like, I just feel so close to that, to, like, the reality. Well,
you haven't seen Zone of Interest yet?
I know, I haven't. I guess I'm waiting until February 2nd when
it comes out. Yeah, you're certainly talking about it like you've seen it.
Well, I mean, but this is also the White Ribbon, Das Weiße Band, that movie. Yeah.
Der Weiße Band.
You know, just the what is the Hannah Arendt banality of evil, whatever that.
Yeah.
So yeah, you know, and all that being said, I'm super focused on, like, oh, the sun's out today. Like, today, it's a beautiful day. Because, you know what? If we're, like, destined for some fucking mud death camp scenario, I'm fucking taking in today.
Because... Okay, beautiful. Well done.
So, I'm like, refusing to live... You know, we just went into this thing, because, like... I feel like maybe it has some value in this social space.
I am not imagining myself into a future the way that you are. So I'm not going outside and being like, thank God the sun's out because soon I'll be in the mud. That's not what I'm doing.
I mean.
No.
Okay, great. I mean, I don't know.
I don't know either. Anyways, I've been watching Girls.
Oh, I did that. Few months ago, right? It's incredible.
I'm stunned by this show.
It is stunning in hindsight.
I watched it in real while it was happening and thought, this is good.
Yeah.
I like this. I know these people. They're a little younger than me, but this is very
it was so astute. My age.
It's your age. Yeah. It's exactly your age.
Yeah.
And then now watching it again as a 43-year-old person, I'm like, this is literally incredible.
It's a time capsule.
That Lena Dunham, as like a 24-year-old woman, was able to harness her creative energy to create this beautiful, funny, sad, complicated, strange, and like ultimately true depiction of her own weird life, and it got produced.
Yeah, poetically.
It's amazing.
It really is.
I'm amazed by it. I mean, it is a show that could not be made now. Well, and that's okay.
I don't know, Jack. I've heard Jack say this. I don't know if it's from someone else, but the idea that Lena Dunham was pushed out and we got Greta Gerwig instead.
That's really too bad.
Isn't that intense?
It's really too bad. And it's like, I don't know if Lena Dunham pushed herself out, you know, because sort of when you watch Girls, you realize that like, this is an erratic person if there is truth to this depiction of her. So like, my sense is that the success of Girls kind of pushed Lena Dunham to a place where she was like, I don't need to do this.
I suspect something similar. I mean,
yeah,
I'm always like, why do people, successful people, keep doing stuff?
Right. I don't think the system insisted that Lena Dunham go away. You know, I think Lena Dunham was like, I don't want to participate in this.
Yeah, but like, that's in which the system is like, pushing someone out by being how it is.
She didn't want to be subjected to that kind of criticism, which like Girls is an amazing platform for criticism. It's just like, there's a lot to talk about and there's a lot of things that are tricky and problematic. And then it's just like, but they're all a reflection of the reality.
Real complicated scenarios.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's so good. It looks amazing. The acting that these people are doing is amazing. Mm-hmm. I'm like, this is really... I can't get enough. I'm already in the middle of season 4.
It's also fun to binge because you see sort of how the show, like, sort of relaxes into itself. I really noticed in terms of production design, like, they're able to kind of pull in more kind of aesthetic richness, even though the people, I mean, also the characters are getting more stability money. And money. Yeah. So like they're able to like paint a room or like do a thing. So, so there's like the universe of it, like really
paint the room.
Yeah.
That is so true. I mean, the first season of the show, you're like, it does so beautifully capture this feeling of like nobody has the resources to really care about mm-hmm. the spaces they live in, but they're bringing their kind of college dorm room whimsy with them.
Yeah. The renovations of that, you know, that main apartment is really funny over time because people move in and out and it's just like...
Well, I just got to the part where she comes back from Iowa and she's quit the writer's workshop because she's truly deranged. So and she gets back and the apartment has been renovated by Adam and Mimi Rose is living there and it all just feels so insane.
But that and Iowa, a hole in the that wall. Whole Iowa artistic journey, I actually think is really tremendous because, like, it's a joke that one of my professors at Parsons would tell about the New Yorker. Like, every article is exactly the same. Like, it's just such a formula for writing. And that's, like, the feeling of Iowa that, like, oh, you go there to, like, learn how to write, like, everyone else. In a
specific way. That, like, feels unique, and it does,
but it also, like...
I don't know if Lena Dunham... I don't think Lena Dunham went to Iowa Writers' Workshop. I mean, maybe she...
I don't think so either. I think... I mean, she was at the New School for a moment, I think, at the same time.
It was a very hysterical depiction of this, like...
Yeah, but also, like, the killing of, like, your kind of... foundational, like, artistic drive, which for this character is, like, a kind of wildness.
Status academia is kind of there, or at least in the past, has been there to kind of create a homogenous way of thinking, right? Yeah. It's like, this is how you're going to think about this practice now.
Yeah. This is what your history is. This is your tradition. Now, like, continue it. Thank you.
And Lena Dunham could not conform to their structures, and it was really embarrassing.
Well, and then you get to the point where you're like, I don't even want to write, because if this is what writing is, fuck it.
Totally.
And then she, eventually she finds her way back to it. You're not there
the
yet.
The way that she sabotages herself at every turn is just incredible. But
another way of looking at that is the way that she discovers what she can and can't do and will and won't do.
Right.
Like, the whole show is, like, that period of time after college where you're, like, just dropped onto the planet in this weird way after this weird education. And you're, like, have no idea that you have no idea who you are.
I do feel like that, like, you are, when I think about what I know of your history, you were having a kind of Hannah Horvath trajectory after college of being like, I'm going to try to do this thing that I've been trained to do, but really I can't participate in it. And I'm going to work at a restaurant periodically. You know, it's like,
yeah, I feel close to her character if I had, except she has these parents and they do this money thing. There is, like, she does have even like, I think the very first episode is about them cutting her off.
It's but she, so but amazing. But they're obsessed
with her, and, like, she can always go home. There is this safety net that I never, like, felt. I mean, I could also go home to, like, a kind of death camp scenario also. But, you know, and she feels sort of that way, too. I mean, those episodes where she goes home are really incredible.
Ugh, I love when she goes home. I mean, the Hannah in the first episode, like, getting cut off at dinner and then getting high on opium at her apartment with her friends and going to her parents' hotel room the last night they're in New York after basically refusing to see them and being like, I believe I am the voice of my generation and you should give me $1,100 a month, which, like, doesn't seem like that much money in a way, but her mom is just like, are you insane? It's really good.
It is. Well, I mean, and that is such a kind of tell of, like, how you read $1,100 a month. I mean, obviously now it's also a different thing because, like, that's a sandwich, but...
that was 10 years ago, and now it's a sandwich.
Like, I think... so I mean, and I didn't realize this until way late, because I actually, one of my resentments is, like, I wish that I had known sooner, like, I would take even a day sooner, that, like, pretty much everyone had a kind of that scenario, mm-hmm. or, like, a version of that scenario, like, parents who were connected to people, who were, like, people in the world, you know, right. so there are other, like, right, currencies right. besides, like, right. you know, that money, whatever.
Right.
But, like, I didn't really know that I did know that I had nothing, in a way. You know, not nothing. Like, I have my own privileges, absolutely. But, yeah. like, the way in which I was not fully, and maybe, you know, this seems likely to have been an impossibility for me to, like, fully understand. And maybe it's, if I did understand, I would never have moved to New York.
Mm.
But, but it was just like a different, I was on a, playing a different game because I was trying to survive in this place of like art, that art isn't about, I mean, we have this romantic idea of like a kind of Van Gogh art survival kind of fantasy thing. Mm. But that's not like how New York works.
No.
Like it is like parents paying for your apartment and your life and being a bit, you know, available or whatever, various privileges.
Yeah.
So
I sometimes think about that show, like, who am I? Like, who do I relate to the most? And I'm not them. I'm not them. Like, my life has been so different than theirs, but like, I guess in terms of like parental structures, I'm the most like Marnie in terms of like, just being determined to, like, support myself and do the things I'm supposed to do.
Yeah.
Because of, like, the education that I have. Like, I'm not relying on my parents, but, like, there's certainly, I have no, I'm certainly in a situation where I'm like, if I had to, I could. It's like, now I'm, like, so far past even asking that question that it's, mm-hmm. like, it feels odd. But, yeah, I am, unfortunately, and hopefully not personality-wise in many ways, but, like, I am a Marnie.
I mean, it's so, there's all such incredible characters.
They really are.
Because they're really all, are. I mean, it's, yeah. I mean, this is, to mention, like, Sex and the City in relationship to girls, in that sense, like, feels so insane. But it really was, I think, you know, when it came out, it was, like, the new Girls. I mean, the new Sex and the City.
Sex and the City, yeah.
But it's so, I think that like comparison is so absurd in terms right, of like what it is. But
the show is inherently just so diametric because they don't have money. Like, it's just so different
yeah, when you're in a situation where the money dynamics are for all of so them. Different. Like getting married to someone who's rich. The way that the sad boyfriend character gets rich off the tech and then loses everything.
Oh my God.
The kind of Wheel of Fortune money.
Incredible. Thing. His whole trajectory is so interesting. And I mm-hmm. think a lot of his trajectory must have been shaped by his like desires as an actor to like kind of be or then not be on the show in general.
Yeah, there is something strange like, to the way he comes in, and especially at the end, how he looks.
He just disappears for periods of time. Mm-hmm. And you're like, oh, he didn't want to be on the show at this point. He was off being some other kind of actor or whatever.
Yeah.
But his and Marnie's story is really interesting. She's so embarrassing in her relationship to men
mm-hmm.
in particular. What I forgot about that show is that Ray is actually the like lead the male character He's on also that like show.
The good person.
Because you remember Adam, of course. Like, right. he is... And you remember the Chris Abbott character because he's so handsome, but, like, you forget that Ray is connected uh-huh. to all of them.
Uh-huh.
Ray is, like, the glue, the male glue of that show, which is so interesting.
It is odd.
And he is there to, like, make commentary on each of them.
Well, but no one does the commentary as ferociously as Shoshana in the engagement party.
Oh my god.
Has that happened?
Well, she does the commentary at the beach house.
Oh my god, the beach house.
When they all get really drunk and Lena Dunham is trying to avoid intimacy with Marnie, so she invites all the boys over, the gay boys. Uh-huh. And then Shoshana gets so drunk that she's just like, you're all ridiculous narcissists, and I can't even believe I've spent this much time with you, because you don't even know I'm here. You think that I'm like a ridiculous ghost, but you're the ones who are disgusting. Mm-hmm. It's so, like, it's such a shock. And then you're like, well, of course Shoshana's been the one observing.
Yeah. Have you gotten to the engagement party? Has that happened? No, she's
who not. Who's engagement? Well,
Shoshana's engaged at the end.
Oh no, I have not.
I don't know how that sequencing is, but, yeah, it's incredible.
No, she's really...
It continues that line of like, oh, I don't want to be friends with you.
Right. Like, I'm really excited for when she goes to Japan, because I remember that But right now she's in this phase of like looking for jobs and like kind of mm-hmm. nailing her first interview at like Ann Taylor. And then she's just like,
I'm not taking this job.
She's like, I don't even actually want to work here. And the lady interviewing her is like, are you serious?
It's incredible.
It's so, so good. And all the supporting characters are so amazing. And that, like, dweeby artist that Marnie's obsessed with and uh-huh. starts sleeping with. Uh-huh. And, oh my god. And then Greta Lee being his, like, assistant who goes on to be this, like, mm-hmm. young, unbearable gallerist who hires Marnie as her assistant.
Mm-hmm. Amazing.
And I know we haven't said anything about Jessa, but Jemima Kirk,
wow,
as an actress, is the one who's, like, has the most profound kind of performance.
Yeah, I think that's true. Well, because it's also that it's her disappearing act and her, like, woundedness. Like, that episode at her parents' house and the way that she is, like...
Oh, my God.
You know, that father relationship and then the rehab with that weird guy.
That really gutted me when she was talking to her dad on the swings and said... And he said, well, you don't ever show up for me. And she's just like, I'm the child.
Yeah.
Like, I'm the child. And it just was like, wow. Like,
yep.
You unfortunately ended up in this situation because of, like, your terrible parents.
Yeah.
Oh, it really, really made me sad. Oh, her story is hard.
Oh, my God. Anyway. Now I, like, want to rewatch the whole thing again.
It's amazing. The scene where Jemima Kirk also, like, the way she sets her life up for tragedy, and she ends up in that marriage to that hideous guy from Bridesmaids, and then when the marriage, like, falls apart in an instant after she meets his parents,
mm-hmm.
and she goes back to Hannah's apartment, and which is, like, the hub of, like, safety for these people mm-hmm. in a way, and Hannah's in the tub, and she just walks in the house and Hannah screams. And then Jemima Kirk, without any dialogue, just takes off all her clothes and gets in the tub and sobs. And you're like, this is like the most intimate, beautiful show that was ever made.
I mean, that Patrick Wilson episode, it's just endless. Like, really.
It is really
when
endless.
I watched it originally, there were these, like, jewel episodes. But I wasn't, like, fully convinced that the show was, like, so genius. But I was like, they're definitely, like, these episodes that are... That Patrick Wilson episode, specifically, I always thought was, like, an incredible little thing. Anyway,
wonderful
show. You survived
show.
The storms.
I literally went to line dancing in the storm last night and walked across town, and I was, like, essentially being blown into a ditch by gale force winds as I tried to walk to line dancing. Yeah. And I was like, this is really crazy. It was like a hurricane last night.
We did not have a wind situation. It rained all night. Like, And the snowstorm, too. It was, like, not a wisp of wind. The snow just fell down.
Oh, no. I arrived at line dancing fully drenched. Like, I had to take my socks off and wring them out in a sink.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, it was crazy. I mean, luckily I had a t-shirt and shorts with me so I could just take off my wet clothes, but...
Wow.
It was... I mean, I walked home in shorts because I was like, I'm not putting on those wet pants. Yeah. But it was like 50 degrees last night.
Wow. Bizarre.
Very weird weather. We're having really weird weather. I mean, I see that Florida is being blown off the map.
Yeah, weather's crazy. You know, I'm like, couldn't we just focus on, like, crazy climate? Couldn't that just be the drama? Do we need, like, insurrections and stuff as well? Fascist shenanigans? Let's just...
No, I mean, the ultimate irony is that Florida is taking the brunt of climate change. They're going to be blown off the map, and I think the kind of poverty that it leaves the Floridians with propels them towards, like, absolutely, believing in Donald Trump.
Right.
It's astounding. Anyways.
Oh, my goodness. Oh.
Goodness gracious. What else happened? I went to see Viv Bond at Joe's Pub.
Fun.
It was fun. And, God, the interstitial work.
Yeah.
That they do is so funny.
That's the show, right?
Yeah. It is the show. It's wonderful.
Yeah, it's really great.
Laughing. I made the Claire Saffitz prune cake. I had a dinner with Stuart and Tess and Kim Brandt, and I made the prune cake by Claire Saffitz. Absolutely. I mean, now here's the thing, and this is kind of crazy to me, but I had all my things really organized, and I was, you know, the company was coming in a couple hours, and I put the cake in the oven, and then I was wandering around the kitchen, and I saw a little teeny pot with melted butter in it. And I was like, what's that? And I was like, obviously I'd like prepared it for something. And then I was like, oh my God, that is meant to be in the cake.
Oh no.
And so the cake at that point was basically fully baked, but I pulled it out of the oven and I basted it with the butter and it just absorbed right in because clearly it was hungry for fat. So then I put it back in the oven, finished baking, came out. And on that first night, it was a little bit dry, but served with the prune syrup, it was good. The next day, it was good as gold. It was just as if I'd never messed it up.
Well, you'll have to make it again and see if that's true.
No, I wouldn't make that mistake again. Trick me once. I see. Trick me once.
Molly Boz made some kind of chicken thing.
Oh, she made chicken au poivre.
Right.
Instead of steak au poivre. Yeah. It's steak au poivre preparation, but just chicken. And she'd made a very, like, crispy skin on one side.
Sure, sure.
With thighs. I think Claire had something on her Patreon, but I fell asleep during it, so I'll go back.
Oh, I've been doing so much savory oatmeal. And what I've really thinking of it as fried rice, essentially, in terms of, like, flavor universe.
Wow, tell me what you're putting in it.
What am I putting in it? I haven't done it in a couple of days now, so I'm like, what was that? Mushrooms. So also, like, trying to do, like, stay a vegetarian kind of thing. So I made, like, a full batch of, like, a mushroom, onion, garlic, ginger, I don't know, stuff. As, like, a kind of flavor base. And then what? I used some onion, what is it called? Sauteed onion, better than bouillon. Stuff too.
Oh, so, okay. That's one of the better than bouillon flavors. Mm-hmm.
I think it's just sauteed onion.
Wow. Yeah. I gotta get that.
Yeah, it's nice. You know, and then like...
I have never even seen that. Soy saucy, I've order that.
I don't know. What am I, you know, whatever's in the fridge kind of vibe. But yeah, I mean, the key is like, because the oats, like, really like push me into this other thing. Yeah, what would I put on there? What would I, like, so, and then like, I mean, I kind of pickled some radish with like, pickled ginger. One time, oh, yeah. I used some kimchi another time for, like, some acidity cutting through.
Wow.
Cilantro at the end. Oats as rice, essentially. Delicious. It's actually, like, better than rice. It just has, like, a rich, deeper flavor, I think. So, yeah, I don't know.
Well, that's good to hear because, you know, my system egg. Doesn't love rice.
You know, egg, like okay. You would do, like, a fried rice.
I love fried rice, but God knows if I eat oats. It, it's not going to want to come healthy. Out. So I'll try it with oats because oats work well in my colon.
Great. Yeah, colon. Well, they're just better for you. So just substitute oats.
Are you using steel-cut oats or just rolled oats or what's going on?
Steel-cut oats?
Really?
I think. I don't know.
Are they the ones that take a long time to cook?
They're not the, like, instant five whatever.
Okay.
But they still don't take, you know, they don't take that long.
How long are we talking? 20 minutes?
10?
Okay.
I don't know.
Well, I'm curious.
I'm not sure what, they're not the, like, quick oats.
When are you ever coming into the city again?
Oh, on Sunday for the Lloyd Knight show at the Guggenheim.
Oh, that's right. Good thing I asked. I'll be there. I'm coming with Pam. She's love my it. Date.
Yeah.
And I know others are coming, and I'm excited.
Yeah. I think, well, it'll be nice. It'll be nice to see people.
Are you sleeping over, or are you going back?
We'll go no. back.
Is Nomi coming?
Nomi's coming.
What's going to happen to her during the show?
What do you mean?
Is she just going to sit in your lap?
Yeah.
Okay. She's such a good show dog.
She's great. It's like gives people something to do while we talk. It's great.
Right. And look she never, dog. She doesn't bark.
She's not a know? Barker. She's not a biter. She's not. She's just a sweetheart. She's right here with me right now.
It makes you and Jack seem like celebrities, or like really strange, like old movie star women to that. Sit there with a dog in your lap.
Yeah, we just have to, and we get to.
Right, this feels like something Lindsay Lohan would do. Yeah. Like she'd arrive at an interview and be like, "I have to have this dog."
Well, it's what's her name? Hilton,
Paris.
Paris Hilton with her little
rat
dog.
Paris, she is really interesting, isn't
she?
What
an icon.
She is an icon.
Yeah, that's like high-level performance art.
Truly. Wow, she really did it. She devoted her life to
I watched so many movies. I watched Heartburn. I watched, what's that, Roseanne? So I watched the Sound of Music. Have you seen this movie recently?
Not in a little
I saw
while.
A clip on something, and I was like, wow, I have to rewatch that movie. I rewatched that movie.
Yeah,
it is good. Incredible.
It's really good.
The look, production design, the musical, color, the music, the singing.
The outdoor scenes.
Incredible.
It's really good. Really good.
And it was it was that snowy day. I put on The Sound of Music. It was heaven. And then I thought,
dreams come true.
Now what am I going to watch? And I tried watching the next recommended thing, which was naturally Mary Poppins. No.
Absolutely not.
This is an unwatchable movie. This Mary Poppins is hideous.
I never
people
liked it as a kid.
People talking like that. Stop it.
I never understood it.
It made sense
of
the remake. I was like, oh, yeah. Like, that makes sense. It was awful. This is awful.
Look, I didn't even try to watch that. Didn't even try.
No. Bad.
Anyways, I've never had much of a feeling about Emily Blunt outside of her character in The Devil Wears Prada.
I think I'm a fan of her as a person as well.
Yeah. I don't... She's certainly talented.
I thought she That's was... That's for sure. So then I fell down a Meryl Streep. So the thought I had after The Sound of Music was, you know what movie I want to watch? I want to watch this movie about Meryl Streep on a boat.
Ugh. Make Them Talk or something like that.
Yeah. It's incredible. Rewatched it.
It's so good. I'm in love with Lucas Hedges.
Incredible. Everyone in the movie is perfect. The movie is excellent. I liked it maybe even more. And then I was just like, Meryl Streep is really where it's at. So then I watched Heartburn.
Mm-hmm.
Incredible. Crazy.
So good. The scene with the pasta really is like, that's my dream. That's what dates should be.
But okay. Do you remember, what is your memory of how that pasta looks in this movie?
Like white slop.
It is dried out white slop. Like,
yeah, but it's not the pasta itself. I mean, it is the...
Yes, the idea 80s. Is incredible. The pasta, I was like, this is not good. But
no, I have no... I don't believe that pasta was good, but I do believe just the gesture of after-sex late-night pasta is wonderful.
Absolutely. The food moment for me from that movie is when they're trying to think of baby songs and eating that pizza. Love that. Love that
song.
But I also love pizza, but I also love pasta. Great movie. So sad. Nora Ephron, Mike Nichols directed.
Wonderful. So wonderful.
And then I watched, what is the name of this movie? Roseanne Barr and Meryl Streep in
She-Devil.
That's fun.
Yeah, really good.
That was fun.
Really fun. But not my favorite.
Not great.
No.
Roseanne Barr is not great.
Well, she's not really an actress. But
yeah, that's right. Jack said they had read the book as like a child or something, and said that Roseanne Barr is in a lesbian relationship with the like coworker at the nursing home place in the book.
Oh, okay, random.
Yeah.
Was there more Meryl Streep on the docket?
Well, we watched this Meryl Streep art film by Laurie Simmons on Criterion. That's bad.
Huh. Oh.
It's not bad. Neither arty enough nor movie. I mean, it's like a... I assume... I'd seen clips from this in like an Art 21 some...
Right.
10 years ago or so.
So Meryl I was interested Streep in like it. Kind of... Meryl Streep seems... She needs to be in like a Hollywood film in order to like contain the magnitude of her acting, you know?
Well, like... As always, she's perfect in this. It's just the thing itself is, like, not enough.
It's not enough.
If on its own, you know, outside of her. She's, like, in, like, a... There's, like, a three sections or something, and she's one of...
Meryl Streep. Oh, my God. I'm sorry, but that reminds me of one of the girls' episodes where Lena Dunham goes to this, like, book party for Jenny Slate, who is one of her classmates, who's, like, hit it big.
Oh, my God. Go on.
Because her Jenny Slate's boyfriend died, and then she like wrote a book really fast, and it just made me think that, like, you know, Lena Dunham would have been jealous of Meryl Streep because Meryl Streep's like first husband died, or her like boyfriend at the time when she just was getting famous died, and I thought Lena Dunham would turn this into a reason to be jealous.
That episode with Jenny Slate where they're just laughing on the stairs.
I can't even wait to get to that,
like,
episode.
Oh, you haven't, right, because that's a, like, kind of...
That's when Adam has somehow kind of moved on to dating Jemima Kirk, which feels...
Wow.
Not good to me.
Incredible.
That feels not good.
Just them giggling on the stairs as they... Because they run into them. Ah! That's so good.
So amazing. So amazing. Aren't you jealous that I'm watching Girls?
I am. But I'm just, you know, in like 6 months, I can rewatch it, I think.
I wish Lena Dunham would make a like 1 hour or a half an hour follow-up capsule episode where she, as a woman her age, runs into Patrick Wilson again, and we get to see them over the course of 48 hours. And what?
Wow.
What would that be like?
Just reboot it. Just pick up from now.
Just age. Literally do an Unjust Like That, but Girls.
Absolutely.
And they can call it Women, you know?
Ugh. That's what I want. Maybe just that can make save the women. World.
They're all still alive. Just do it.
See, because imagine if Lena Dunham had made Little Women.
Wow. I wonder. I wonder.
It would have been interesting.
You know who is deceased is Hannah's father. That actor did die.
Oh.
I know.
Well, because he was gay on the show.
Because he was gay. Do you know what his claim to fame is, that actor?
No, because he looks like some other guy.
He was on Bosom Buddies with Tom Hanks, which was like Tom Hanks' first fame moment in sitcom.
Wow.
I know. And they were the co-stars.
Incredible.
Yeah. Anyways, anything exciting happening? I'm going line dancing again tonight, thankfully.
There's an article in the New York Times about January and, like, appreciating it for everything. I didn't even read it because I was like...
You're like, this is a joke.
Well, but kind of the vibe was like... I could actually appreciate all the depressing parts of January where, like, the holidays are over, you don't have to go anywhere.
Yeah.
You can kind of, like...
Well, that is... You can lay in bed and watch Girls.
Yeah, watch movies all day.
Honestly,
exactly where I'm at. I'm like, but I'm trying. I am looking for like the silver lining of a January moment.
I have been kind of having a ball since
that's great.
The new year. Yeah, it's been me time. A lot of me time.
Yeah,
a lot of me time. I haven't done any interesting cooking beyond the prune cake. It's been great.
I made like a whole, in the middle of dinner last night, I thought, why am I doing this? I made like mashed potatoes with roasted chicken and like a gorgeous salad. And I was just
because
like, this is
thing.
Like a it... real, I'm like, this is so housewife moment right now.
It's just the only, for me at this point, like that's why to be alive, you know, that is why to be alive is to prepare a beautiful meal and enjoy it.
Yeah.
I guess
the reason I did it was because it's 7 p.m. and it's dark out. Like, am I gonna lay down and die or make a chicken?
Like, I think about my Aunt Jane, and that Aunt Jane is constantly making beautiful meals. And it's just, like...
I think,
a way to enjoy life. It, like, makes life...
Yes.
Gives life beauty and meaning and flavor and so nice.
Yeah, I think a meal... A bad meal is a bad omen. How about
and
that?
Also just, like, serving the meal in a way that looks beautiful, too. It's, like... all part of the experience. You're like,
I was listening to Ezra Klein's podcast and he says this thing about like New Year's resolutions, and his was like to really focus on aesthetics, which I thought was, I've
gorgeous.
Never heard anyone like, you know, especially like outside of like a design art, whatever, like, put such like place a concrete priority on like aesthetic appreciation. And I thought that was really incredible in this like political context.
I love that. The other, like, Stuart Singer has been really cooking and making, thinking a lot about like the things that they have in their apartment, mm-hmm. and and having people over for very nice meals where they're making, like, you know, tarts and they're doing the dough themselves. Gorgeous. And yeah. Stuff that's, like, this is a big shift.
Mm. Yeah.
And Stuart came over the other day for this dinner and arrived before the others and just asked if they could look through my cookbooks. And I thought, who are you? Like,
I just got a cookbook from the library because Paige had posted about it. I don't know what it's called. I think it's, like, vegetarian-centric. It looked bizarre. She made some kind of, like, I want to say sweet potato kind of cake thing. And I thought,
yeah,
the fuck?
I want sweet potato cake, yeah.
Yeah, I think it was, like, black sesame and sweet potato.
Sounds like a Natasha Pickowitz recipe. It absolutely does. She loves an ingredient you can't find. But it
looked very simple. Beyond.
She's always that, like, and then just one tablespoon of birch flour. And you're like, what is that?
I don't know if you follow, do you follow Eric Kim on Instagram or anywhere?
I don't, but I love.
Well, they get a lot of hate, it turns out. And,
oh no.
Well, and it, because a lot of their recipes are like American teenager, like they're like, I feel like,
oh, yes,
purposely they're like about, yes, a kind of nostalgia for, like,
oh, yes,
90s food, like a Asian American food culture, so yeah, it is a, like, ends up being a lot of, like, I would say unhealthy type food stuffs.
Sure.
Like, and I'm like, yes, your cookbook is a work of art. Like, I don't think I'd want to make anything from it. But I think there's, like, a great deal to be appreciated about this, like, anthropological food study thing.
Right. But Eric Kim is making a cookbook that's also memoir.
Exactly. So that people are confused by that, I think, is somewhat fair. But also, like, does that mean you have the right to be an asshole? No.
Also, wait. I mean, all food is unhealthy at the end of the day.
No, stop it.
Eating will kill you.
Eating is necessary. Eating is essentially healthy.
Mm.
Yeah.
No, like, yes, like, using whole ingredients, it's all great, but,
if,
like,
if you don't eat, you die. So I think,
but, like, comparing, like, saying Eric Kim's food is any less healthy than, like, you know, any, you know, the other people who cook is, like, no, it's the same. It's just all, like,
well, I don't think that's true. I mean, there's, like, and I don't know, I don't have this cookbook, whatnot, but, like, a hot dog kind of recipe vibe, you know, it has, like, a teenager universe to it, but I'm like, right, well, look through the book before you buy it. I don't know. Like,
or don't buy it. And also just don't comment. Just go away.
I absolutely didn't force you to buy this book.
No.
Or make any of the recipes. People, I mean, Archistratus is such a, like, incredible institution for, like, the idea of a cookbook as something more than just a thing to cook from, you know, in the same way that we have, like, food television. People aren't making that food for the most part. So
do you all have your tickets to the Justin Peck Armory show? I go to work at the Armory now, which is a trip.
That's fine.
I used to rehearse there when I danced for Shenwei, but now I go, and the costume room is this, like, huge, like, wood paneled thing with a giant elk's taxidermy head on the wall, and, like, incredible, weird old dirty paintings of old white dead men, and then, like, and then the lighting is so bad you can't see anything, but it's but it's kind of glamorous.
Yeah, it feels like has a richness to it.
It's definitely rich and old. It's rich and old.
Yeah.
And not the most practical, but it's been fun. It's a novelty.
Good.
Anyways, come on down. It's in March. Get your tickets. They're available.
They are available. Park Avenue Armory.
I've never had a show at the Park Avenue Armory. Never in my life.
Yeah. Well, here we are. Here we are. It's new for me. Something new. But it's in Chicago first?
Yes.
At the end of the month.
Chicago in a couple weeks.
So if you're in Chicago or like Minneapolis or Detroit or...
Chicago Shakespeare Theater. Just get your tickets. Drive to Chicago if you're in the area. Put on a coat. And
put on the album as you drive there. It's very driving. Yeah. Driving vibe.
Yeah. Doing, dong, dong.
Ding, dong, ding, dong, ding, dong, dong, ding.
Da, na, na, na,
okay,
na,
are we done? We're over an hour.
Na, 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 na. Yep.
Sun is out. Gotta get outside.
Okay, sun is no longer out here, but it's okay.
It comes and goes.
I gotta sit down at my computer and get some things done before we have fittings this afternoon. Okay.
Well, we loves you, and we will be back again here next week.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.